Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research and unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
On our show today, Adam, we get to talk with the director of Hollywood Health and Society, a program of the USC Annenberg Norman Lear Center, Sandra DeCastro Buffington, about health and Hollywood, about health communications and accuracy and how that affects the entertainment industry.
Amazing, Christy. She is responsible for getting hundreds of health messages on the top one of the top 100 shows across all of Hollywood and major networks. This is an amazing accomplishment, and I think our viewers are going to be inspired, and that's what she hopes to do.
Remarkable. But first, we have some exercise. Yeah, we have some research that matters about exercise.
Well, we're exercising our mouths a little bit here, but we're going to talk about whether massage or exercise helps those sore muscles.
About statin drugs and reasons why people might stop taking them.
About alcohol use in breast cancer survivors. The results could be surprising.
And about healthy doctors leading to healthy patients.
And maybe Christy and I will disclose some things. We'll find out. But let's dive right into our very first research that matters, Christy, about exercise or massage for sore muscles. Do you ever get sore muscles, Christy, after exercising?
Yes, of course.
Are you over the age of 20? If you are, then you're going to get sore muscles after exercising.
I do. And I'm a big fan of both exercise for improvement of that soreness as well as massage. But this is a study looking to see if they're as good as one another.
Yeah, this was in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. It's not a journal that Christy and I always follow, but we did this week. And they took 20 women who they then half the time they got a 10-minute massage on one shoulder and or a 10-minute exercise program on the other. And they kind of alternated which women got which one. And these all the women had been exposed to exercise previously to the point where they had sore muscles.
And what they found was after their exercise to create their sore muscles, they all ached about a level 5 on a 10-point scale. And what they found was that the exercise program to reduce soreness and the massage to reduce soreness did about equal, about the same, to make improvements in that level of soreness.
And we should be the first to say this was a small study, 20 people, and there seems to be some biases here, not the least of which is the type of exercise that had them have sore muscles was they were hooked up to, they were shrugging their shoulders against some resistance in machines that kind of created tension in their muscles. But on the other hand, I do weightlifting once in a blue moon and always have sore muscles after weightlifting or after running when having started back after a lapse. So I really relate to this a lot more than many things.
Well, and exercise, it makes sense too that exercise is increasing your blood flow and helping sort of work out some of that lactic acid that makes people sore. And more exercise is a good thing. So I think this is positive. It makes sense.
Well, and I think also particularly for maybe some of our older patients or for people who haven't been exercising, when they first start exercising, they get really sore. And the question here is, do you need to stop your exercising? Mm-hmm. Or perhaps, and this is where I'm going to really be interested in this, Christy, with my messages with my patients is, maybe you need to keep on exercising because that may actually be as beneficial. More to be seen, but this is interesting research. What's about our very next research that matters?
Well, this is about those statin drugs that we have, you know, tons of patients in our country.
Cholesterol-lowering drugs, right?
Cholesterol-lowering drugs that are very popular because they improve survival in patients who have heart disease and high cholesterol.
In this particular research, the authors were really looking at why people discontinue their statins, and they were looked at over 10,000 patients to really find out two really broad reasons why. And one was perceived side effects of them, and the other is perhaps this challenge of taking a medicine for a lifelong reason.
I think it was interesting to hear that around the side effects issue that some people stopped it just for the fear of side effects or for having what they thought might be side effects but didn't necessarily talk to their doctor about it. And then the issues around cost and not understanding that this is something that is supposed to be lifelong was a part of that picture. And highlights to me that communication with your doctor and talk about the benefits and the risk being the cost is in that category, being a part of that conversation to understand how important it is for you and your health.
Yeah, I think this is a twofold problem, Christy. I think one of this is it's not really as much a medical issue. By that, I mean, I think this idea of trying to take a medicine for the rest of your life for a thing like cholesterol that maybe we haven't done as good a job really emphasizing to patients is a serious risk factor for heart disease. Unlike blood pressure that I think almost everyone recognizes is a risk factor for heart disease and strokes. So on one end, I think we haven't done a good enough job. The other end, it's like taking a multivitamin. Most people don't take multivitamins all of their lives. You kind of forget. And if you can't take a multivitamin, which almost has no side effects, how are you going to take a medicine that does have side effects for the rest of your life? I think there's a problem.
Well, but it also comes back to the case. I mean, the multivitamin's not going to extend your life, but that statin, particularly if you have heart disease, you know, really statistically it will. So understanding, is it really worth it to you to cut down on those strokes and heart attacks?
So a couple different perspectives here. Let's look at our next research that matters and see if we have the same or similar or different perspectives. This was about alcohol consumption in breast cancer survivor, an article that was in the Journal of Clinical Oncology.
This is looking at 23,000 women who participated in this collaborative breast cancer study following from 1988 all the way up to the early 2000s. And one of the things they tracked was the amount of alcohol that women drink before diagnosis of breast cancer and their survival and how much they drank after.
And there was a concern that perhaps those who drink alcohol might have higher mortality from their breast cancer. But in reality, actually, it was the opposite. And there was actually a decrease association with breast cancer mortality, a very significant one, predominantly because of a reduction in heart disease among those who were moderate drinkers, 3 to 6 drinks per week, predominantly wine. I found that actually pretty remarkable, but I'm not certain what I do with it.
Right. Well, I think it says if you are drinking and get 3 to 6 drinks a week and you get breast cancer and you decide to continue to drink that amount of alcohol, I mean, those people were 15% less likely to die from heart disease than the people who didn't drink at all. So I wouldn't say go out and start drinking, but if you're already, I don't know that I would be harping on that as the thing to worry about.
No, and if you have a history of breast cancer in your family and you drink a couple glasses of wine a week, this data would also suggest you don't need to quit drinking to lower your risk. If anything, that your overall health is probably not going to suffer. So there's more to come here.
Yeah,
but
it's a little muddy.
We're not blaming the alcohol in this particular circumstance, but we're not encouraging you to go out and drink either.
Let's talk about healthy doctors and healthy patients. This is really fascinating.
My arm's up. I'm voting for this one, Kristen.
Okay, me too. Of a relationship between the health of doctors and whether or not the physician adheres to the recommended screening or vaccination practices and whether or not their patients then follow through with those recommendations.
And this actually was research done in Israel by the leading health insurer of Israel, Clalit, C-L-A-L-I-T. We had the medical director, Dr. Davidson, on our show a few months ago, Christy. And this was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. So it's gone from Israel to Canada, down here, North Carolina. And the question is, if I'm a strong believer in immunizations and I get my own flu shot each year, are my patients more likely to get flu shots? And I think the answer from this is pretty strongly yes. If I exercise regularly, am I more likely to counsel my patients on exercise? The answer is probably yes.
And if I am recommending vaccinations just because I'm supposed to, but I don't really believe in them, people know. And obviously, based on this data, and I think there's other data to support this, that our patients are influenced in how we present things. And if we believe it's real, we probably are a little more convincing. Well, that does conclude the Research That Matters portion of our show. We're going to take a quick break, Adam, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Sandra DeCastro-Buffington about health and Hollywood. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Today on Conversations, Christy, we're going to be talking with a director of Hollywood Health and Society, a program of the USC, University of Southern California, Annenberg Norman Lear Center, with Sandra DeCastro Buffington about health and Hollywood. Welcome to Your Health.
Thank you so much.
We are glad to have you with us and excited about this topic. Tell us and share for our listeners a little bit about how your journey led you into the health communication industry.
Well, Christy, I started out in public health. I graduated from Johns Hopkins University with a master's degree in public health and started working in Latin America and the Caribbean right out of grad school. I myself am Brazilian-American, so I grew up between the U.S. and Brazil, speaking Portuguese and later Spanish, so it was very natural for me to work in that region of the world. And I was working to reach large populations in countries throughout the Latin American Caribbean region with public health messages, and early on began partnering with the entertainment industry, using either popular television serials or popular music or very creative public service announcements on television to reach large populations. And we found that by making something a household word, that it would enter popular culture, and getting people talking about things was a predictor of behavior change. So it was very natural for me to begin working with Hollywood to reach populations not only in the U.S., but in over 100 countries around the world through television storylines.
You're aiming high. You weren't making a small intervention to make something a household word.
That's right.
Well, you know, Sandra, you and I met at a Centers for Disease Control meeting where we were on the same panel, and I was so grateful to go before you because your work is really so inspiring. And I guess first off, when we think about public health messages, we kind of think about the old messages that come on TV that this is, you know, to discourage drug use. This is your brain. This is your brain on eggs, you know. And you've gone way beyond that. Was there a light bulb somewhere, sometime that went off that said, the ways that we traditionally talk about health messages are not effective and there's a better way of doing this?
Well, the field of entertainment education has been around for many decades. And what we've learned from our research is that when viewers are transported into a story, when viewers lose track of time, forget their surroundings, come to see characters as beloved family or friends and care deeply what happens to them, this is the moment that people learn more than any other way. And this term, transportation, is actually a measure of engrossment. So when viewers are engrossed in a storyline, they are learning without even knowing it. And the belief and the research actually shows that there is less resistance, so people are more open and they take in a lot more information. And we see that there are much higher knowledge gains, attitude changes, and behavior changes as a result from exposure to stories that transport people.
So give us an example of a certain topic where you're able to really make change with this approach.
Okay, I can give so many examples, but let's start with organ donation. Organ donation specialists are always trying to get people to sign up to become organ donors because there are, for example, more than 50,000 people waitlisted for solid organs right now in the United States. So we work with a lot of shows on this particular topic because the writers and producers are always looking for drama, conflict to resolve, and obviously organ transplantation offers a lot of drama. And one of the storylines we evaluated was on the show Numbers, and we had consulted quite a bit on that storyline. And what we found is that 10.1% of viewers of this storyline on the show Numbers signed up to become organ donors as a result of seeing the show.
Wow.
Now, what was happening? In that particular storyline, the character, the leading character at the end, pulled out his driver's license and said, "See, I've been an organ donor for years." And he actually said, "You know, I was at the DMV today," and he tossed a stack of organ donation applications on the table and said, "Yeah, I brought some applications in case any of you want to sign up." And so there was there was role modeling, there was information about how to sign up to become an organ donor.
And, that's great.
You know, we were very lucky. It's actually quite rare. It's almost like having a public service announcement embedded right in the story.
Well, and that leads me to the kind of question that I have, which is, when I hear this, I would imagine that your editors are fiercely, and the producers and directors are fiercely independent. How do you suggest the storyline, and maybe even have another example of a topic that you know if they do it, they'll probably do it in a way that leads to gains in public health, but you don't really know?
Well, I think you're getting at the question of how do we actually work with these writers and producers.
Absolutely.
We're in the inspiration business. What we learned early on is that writers and producers do not see themselves as health educators. It's not their job. So we learned to ask them what they cared about. And just about every writer said that they care about telling the most compelling story they can. That's what they're about. They're artists. So we said, okay, we're going to help you make your stories more compelling by making them more realistic, more accurate. So anytime a writer is working on a storyline, and we work with all the top shows, Grey's Anatomy, we worked with House the entire run, we worked with ER, we also work with crime shows, with children's programming, really with comedy. We work with daytime and prime time. We pretty much work with all of these shows. And as a result, we have inspired more than 365 different storylines in the span of 3 years. So how do we do this? Well, we connect writers and producers to health experts like yourself, people like you who have patient loads, who have case studies, and know real stories of real people. So we'll take we took Dr. Atul Gawande, who I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
He's a surgeon from Harvard, and he's also a full-time writer with The New Yorker magazine. And he came in as my guest to speak with the writers of the show ER, right before, it was in the last season, the final season of its 14-year run. I think it was 14 years. And he was going to talk with them about the Safe Surgical Checklist, and that's something he works with the World Health Organization on. But I said to him, start with a story. Start with a case study. And he did. And he told the case study about a little girl in Austria who was out for a walk on a winter's day with her parents. And suddenly they looked around and she was gone. And they discovered she'd fallen through a crack in the ice and drowned. And it is this incredible story about what they did once they retrieved her body. All the things they tried. They transported her to the medical system and all the things that went on there. She was brain dead for over an hour and a half. And today, that little girl is a healthy 8-year-old. But let me give you another couple of examples.
We're going to take a short break.
Okay.
I want you to hold that thought. Christy's going to bring us right back, but we're going to take a short break.
All right.
But we're going to continue talking with our guest, Sandra DeCastro Buffington, about health in Hollywood. Stay with us. You're listening to Your Health. We'll be right back.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We've been talking with Director of Hollywood Health and Society, a program of the USC Annenberg Norman Lear Center, Sandra DeCastro Buffington, about health and Hollywood. And before the break, Sandra, you were sharing with us your strategies of inspiring writers and people, leaders in the entertainment industry through stories and through the opportunity to make their stories more realistic. One question that occurred to me was the challenge of rare stories that may truly happen but might be rare, like CPR, the number of times that that comes on TV where it's a little, you know, touch to the chest and the person comes back to life. And what kind of, if you've had any challenges with making those messages more realistic for families?
That is a great question. And there's so many topics like that. For example, time frames will always be skewed on television. You'll have a 9-month pregnancy take place in 9 minutes. CPR, that could be a long, laborious procedure, takes place in a minute. Time frames will always be distorted. So these TV shows, the narratives, are not documentaries. That isn't the purpose, and we can't count on them for that. One of the questions I look at when the medical community is concerned about portrayal, I always ask, what is the trend line? We do media mapping at Hollywood Health and Society. We look at the top 20 to 30 scripted shows every year, and we code for every single bit of health content in those top shows.
Wow.
So we're talking thousands of storylines over the course of, we've been doing this for about 8 years. And so, you know, there have been studies that you know, criticize Hollywood for inaccurate portrayals of certain topics. But I look at the trend lines. Is accuracy on the rise? If 52% of the storyline depict safety measures for children around, you know, sports and, you know, skateboarding and seatbelts and things like that, if 52% of those storylines portray those safety measures accurately, well, is that good or bad? We have to look at the trend. Where do we come from? And if there is, you know, an increase in accuracy, I'm happy with that. Because we're never going to get 100% accuracy.
You know, when I watched you present in Atlanta, you gave a story, a really inspiring, and I know you're trying to inspire, but the story of how you kind of changed, I think, a discourse on domestic violence with this international work and taking the reporters internationally to hear stories. Can you relate how that came to be and the kind of impact? Because I think it changed, even for a family doctor who deals with domestic violence routinely, it changed the way I think about an issue.
Well, that's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And I, you know, I was working to inspire Hollywood writers to write about global health topics. And I realized a lot of the writers we worked with hadn't had exposure. They hadn't traveled. And having grown up myself overseas, back and forth, living in 5 different countries before my mid-20s, I knew how important that was. So I was able to take a group of writers and producers to South Africa and to India. And actually, we've had 4 trips in the last 2 years. And I was able to take these amazing leading writers from Grey's Anatomy, Touch, Private Practice, some of the leading shows, Nickelodeon's children's programming, Disney Pixar films, into city dumps, the biggest slums in the world, huge public hospitals, small rural clinics, mobile clinics. We met 200 children rescued from sex slavery. I mean, we really went into areas with a lot of poverty and disproportionate health risk. But the key was to meet the innovative leaders, the ones with innovative solutions. And one of the solutions we heard about and learned about was a solution to domestic violence in the townships of South Africa. And the one of the executive producers of the show, Touch, was with us on this trip. And she was so inspired by what we heard that she came back and wrote this story for the third episode of Touch, which is now in its second season and doing very well on Fox. And the story was, and I think I showed a clip of it, that when domestic violence is going on in a home and the community can hear it, people, men and women, will grab pots and pans from their kitchen and go out and stand outside in front of that home and start banging with a wooden spoon or a metal spoon on a pot or pan, and they start making this collective racket. And it says, I see you. We're not going away until this stops, and they won't stop clanging until the violence stops. And it also gives them time to call the authorities for help. And this is now widespread. This technique is used all over South Africa, and I also know there's a community in Peru that's picked it up. And she wrote it into an episode of Touch. And, you know, this is one way that we get this kind of information out to the public worldwide.
That's incredible.
The story is so powerful. It sounds like instead of a very methodical approach of your organization to say, well, these are the issues we're going to tackle, that by taking these trips and inspiring through real stories, that there's more of an organic approach to see what captures the hearts of the artists. Is that fair?
It is totally fair. And yet we actually have a combination of that approach and also our funders, like the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Skoll Global Threat Fund. We have, you know, a huge list of funders. Each funder gives us priorities for the year. So we aim for those priorities as well. And that just means we really kind of scour the world for leading experts with inspiring stories and case studies on those topics.
Well, and so you're starting an initiative now or that we read about HHS Climate Change Initiative.
That's right.
How does this fit your model? What do you hope to achieve? What's your vision? Because this could be perceived as a political agenda. It could be perceived as a health agenda. It could be perceived as we need to do something.
All of the information we provide to writers and producers by experts is evidence-based. So whether it's climate science or whether it's health science, it is all scientific and evidence-based. We never take a position or a political point of view. That isn't our job. And it is not the job of our experts either. And that's why we work with physicians, researchers, and scientists. So what we hope to achieve is to increase awareness in the public of the impact of climate change on our health. And, you know, we just connect the dots, so that people can either take preventive action or curative action, and we work to increase knowledge and to change behavior.
We have been talking with Sandra DeCastro Buffington about health and Hollywood, and Sandra, we want to thank you for the great work that you were doing with such enormous impact, and
thank
for taking the time to share with us.
Thanks so much, Christy and Adam. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and if with your permission, we'll link up to your website for our listeners to be able to see the work, because I think seeing it and experiencing it is really what your work is all about. And I highly encourage all of our listeners to go to your website and experience your work.
Thank you, and please feel free to join our Facebook page and our Twitter feed as well.
Great.
You have at least two fans right here. Among the 20 million.
Coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health continues now.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the House Call segment of our show today, Adam and I will spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and concerns.
If you have a question you'd like us to address on an upcoming show, send your comments to yourhealth@unc.edu. And Christy, today we're going to be talking about hip replacement surgery and the need to take antibiotics before procedures.
About registries for anxiety medicines.
About a patient who questions their sexual function after prostate cancer treatment.
And about taking too many medicines.
Let's listen to our very first house call.
I had a hip replacement surgery several months ago, and when I went to the dentist, he said I do not need to take antibiotics before getting my teeth cleaned. My orthopedic doctor said I did. Who's right?
That's an excellent question. I'm glad it sounds like your hip replacement surgery was completed and that it sounds like it may have gone well. But this discrepancy between the two different doctors and whether or not you should take antibiotics is a really good question.
And I, unfortunately, Christy, have a habit of saying they're both right at times. And you're going,
it's a good habit.
How is that can be right? Well, then I can be right, too. All three of us are right. And that's because there are different guidelines here at Place. And they're probably each following a different guideline from their own professional associations, which says that you may not have an increased risk from their perspective, which also says maybe we just don't have enough data to really say. I don't know, Chris. Yeah, this is a difficult question.
And just so everyone's on the same page, the reason is this concern that having your teeth cleaned somehow releases some bacteria into your blood that then could get into that joint. And
usually within a year of having a joint replacement, but it's a very small risk occurrence.
So the dentists say, no, you don't have to take antibiotics. And the orthopedic surgeons say, yes, you should take antibiotics. So I would have that conversation very frankly with your doctors and make a call and go with it.
Yeah, because it's not like taking 2,000 milligrams of a drug like amoxicillin. It's not overly dangerous, but it's not completely safe either. So these are tough questions, and you may have to go with the one who's giving you the care that you maybe trust the most in this particular circumstance.
Yeah, I have to say, if I just had a joint replaced, what would I do with those two things? I'd probably take the antibiotic. What would you do, Adam?
I like my dentist an awful lot. Let's listen to our very next house call.
I have heard that doctors can now see any pain or anxiety medication given to me by any other doctor, even without my permission. Is that a good thing, or is that an invasion of my privacy?
Is that a good thing or an invasion of your privacy? I think you're framing a choice here that's a difficult choice because I'm not so certain. I think it's a good thing, but I don't think it's an invasion of your privacy either.
I actually think it is a good thing because it's what this is a database in our state where any person who gets a controlled substance, so narcotic or opioid pain medicines and certain anxiety pills that sometimes people get from multiple doctors, people might not understand what happens when you mix these medicines, but the ability for the doctor to look up and see what people are getting from other sources is helpful for us to keep people safe.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking, is it a good thing from the vantage point of invasion of kind of privacy concerns? And I do think that we have to be concerned about how our health information is shared. But when you're talking about drugs that have such a high rate of abuse and have such a addiction potential, I agree, Christy, because this is how no way we could know a patient who may be getting medications at four different pharmacies and five different doctors all across the state. We're going to be trustworthy, but we're going to verify.
Absolutely. So it's a complicated question. We ought to do a show on this. There's a lot of nuance to this question.
But you should understand that increasingly doctors will look up to see if you're getting one of these opiate pain medications or one of these drugs for anxiety called benzodiazepines. Doctors will look up to see whether or not you're at risk for abuse or taking it appropriately. Let's listen to our next house call, though.
How many men have any sexual abilities after prostate cancer surgery or radiation?
Wow. Well, that we have sort of sad news about that, unfortunately. It sounds like that they're maybe making headway, and I know the urology doctors and surgeons are trying to come up with new techniques to reduce these problems that people have after prostate cancer surgery or radiation. But a large number of people do have trouble with their sexual function afterwards.
Right. This is kind of half empty, half full, but it's also pretty empty, because over half of men, almost two-thirds, will probably have an inability to have a good erection after surgery. The single best predictor of a good erection after surgery is if you had a good erection before surgery. But the good news is, a third of men, sometimes up to 50%, will have a good erection within 2 years after surgery. So it's not a completely bad story.
And I think that's one of those things to weigh out with your doctor of how important is the surgery, how aggressive is the cancer, and to make sure you're having those conversations to know what to expect. Let's take our last house call.
I am on 4 diabetes medications, 3 blood pressure pills, 2 heart medicines, 2 drugs for my cholesterol, and 1 for my stomach. I'm only 53 years old, and I feel like a partridge in a pear tree. Isn't that just too many medicines?
The answer is yes, Christy. We don't want you to be a partridge in a pear tree. That is too many medicines. Complicated question, worthy of an entire show on its own. And each one is probably a good reason, but in their total, once you get above 10, 12 medicines, it's really hard. And we would want to work you with a pharmacist to help you get on less.
Absolutely. And the other common is with diabetes and high blood pressure and heart medicines and cholesterol and stomach. I wonder if weight is part of this picture here. And so one strategy to get off of all those medicines that are helping reduce your chance of heart attacks and strokes is to really do something dramatic to work towards weight loss.
That's a really good point, Christy.
Yeah, then blood pressure won't be so high, and you might not have diabetes.
And you might have a side effect from your stomach from taking the diabetes pill or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well, that'll conclude our house calls today, and we want to thank everyone for joining us for your health. We hope we've addressed some issues and concerns important to you. You can send us your own questions and stories at yourhealth.unc.edu.
And we want to thank the staff of WCHL and UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship, and our guest today, Sandra DeCastro Buffington. We hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Dr. Christy Page. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Bye-bye.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, presented by UNC Family Medicine. You can find this or any other episode of Your Health at WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
And now it's time for The Professionals, local services, expert insights on 97.9 FM WCHL.
I'm Mark Vitale, owner of All About Insurance, one of Nationwide's largest insurance agencies. I was raised a little different. My dad raised me that work was the essence of everything. I learned a lot, but mostly I learned that with hard work comes success. I go around the country helping people in the insurance industry build their businesses, and this is the first thing I say. First of all, you have to love what you do. I believe that it's a profession. It's not a job. And what you're doing is so very, very important for the families and the people you are helping. Because if they lose their home and they don't have the correct protection, or they lose their auto, it could be someone poor and all they have is an auto. They get sick and they don't have the right health insurance. They die and they can't let the dreams that they've dreamed about be able to take care of their family. When I give a check to somebody that we've written, you know, to a spouse after another spouse has died, or to a family member, even though it's a terrible time,
It's comforting to know that someone thought about the dreams that that family had. That's what insurance is all about. Assets can be replaced. Dreams can't be replaced. So you can call in Chapel Hill at 919-933-4000 or stop in at Nationwide Square at 1289 North Fordham Boulevard. Check us out at allaboutinsurancenc.com.
This has been The Professionals on 97.9 FM WCHL. Local services, expert insights.